Welcome to Deborah Byrne Psychology Services Podcast. I am Deborah Byrne, a psychologist, and your host for today. In my podcasts, I talk about a wide range of topics, including relationships, parenting, education, disability, mental health, and the most important topic I consider of all, self-care. I like to keep it informative and practical so that you can become empowered. This podcast is for adults and is for informational purposes only and should never replace your regular therapy sessions. Episode 79. What is self-harm? Self-harm is the deliberate act of harming the surface of the body through cutting or burning, but can also include destructive and dangerous behavior, such as misuse of alcohol or drugs. It is more common for people to think of self-harm as cutting, and although any life-threatening injuries may occur, they are usually not intended as acts of suicide, but can, of course, lead to fatal and serious injuries nonetheless. Self-harm is usually a way of coping with emotional pain, anger, and frustration, and can bring a momentary sense of calm. But this is followed by guilt and shame and the return of the painful emotions that were trying to be avoided in the first place. Self-harm is common among teens. Self-harm is much more common among girls, usually in the 15 to 19-year-old age range, but can be seen in children as young as 11. Please don't rule out adults or boys, though, when thinking about self-harm either, because it is related to other mental health issues. Shame and fear of discovery mean that people often keep self-harm a secret. As a result, a parent may not be the first person to notice this happening. It can be your GP during a medical examination. Self-harm may be commonly associated with other mental health conditions, such as an eating disorder, PTSD, depression, and anxiety. What are the signs and symptoms? In no particular order, the signs and symptoms of self-injury may include old or new scars, fresh cuts, scratches, bruises, or other wounds, excessive rubbing of an area to create a burn, keeping sharp objects on hand, wearing long sleeves or long pants even in hot weather, difficulty in interpersonal relationships, persistent questions about personal identity, for example, who am I? What am I doing here? Behavioural and emotional instability, impulsivity and unpredictability, statements of helplessness, hopelessness or worthlessness, misuse of drugs or alcohol, burn marks on the skin, usually with cigarettes, scratching or picking at the skin, hitting or punching either themselves or an object, deliberately breaking of bones, pulling out hair, swallowing poisonous substances such as glue or bleach, taking an overdose of drugs, including prescription medication, carving words or symbols on the skin, piercing the skin with sharp objects. As I've said, self-harm usually occurs in private and is done in a controlled or ritualistic manner. Any area of the body can be targeted, but usually the arms, legs or front torso, as these can be covered and hidden, allowing for the self-harm to continue in secret. Many people self-harm only a few times and then stop, but others will continue and it becomes a long-term repetitive behaviour. The causes and risk factors. There's no one single or simple cause that leads someone to self-harm. In general, though, it is thought that non-suicidal self-harm is usually the result of an inability to cope in healthy ways with psychological pain. The person has a hard time regulating, expressing, or understanding emotions. The mix of emotions that trigger self-harm is complex. For example, there may be feelings of worthlessness, loneliness, panic, anger, guilt, rejection, self-hatred, or confused sexuality. Certain risk factors may increase the risk of self-harm. These may include age, having friends who self-harm, life issues, for example, neglect, abuse, or other traumatic events, mental health issues, such as borderline personality disorder, depression, anxiety disorder, PTSD, and eating disorders, excessive alcohol or drug use. Diagnosis and treatment. Some people may ask for help, but more likely it will be discovered by family members, their friends, or a doctor. There's no diagnostic test for self-harm, but it is usually based on a physical and mental evaluation carried out by a psychiatrist or psychologists who have experience in dealing with and treating self-harm. They may also evaluate for other mental illnesses that may be linked to self-harm. Treatments. There is no one treatment plan for self-harm. It is based on the individual's needs being treated, taking into account any other mental health issue. Psychotherapy, also known as talk therapy, or psychological counselling can help the individual identify and manage the underlying issues that trigger self-harm. Several types of individual psychotherapy may be helpful, such as cognitive behavioural therapy, which helps you identify unhealthy negative beliefs and behaviours and replaces them with healthy positive ones. Dialectical behavioural therapy, a type of CBT that teaches behavioural skills to help you tolerate distress, manage or regulate your emotions, and improve your relationship with others. Psychodynamic psychotherapy, which focuses on identifying past experiences, hidden memories or interpersonal issues at the root of your emotional difficulties through self-examination guided by a therapist. Mindfulness-based therapies, which help you live in the present, appropriately perceive the thoughts and actions of those around you to reduce your anxiety and depression and improve your general well-being. In addition to individual therapy sessions, family therapy or group therapy also may be recommended. Don't forget that as parents and a family, you too need support, so consider therapy for yourself and any siblings. If the person injures themselves severely or repeatedly, the doctor may recommend that they be admitted to a hospital for psychiatric care. Hospitalisation, often short-term, can provide a safe environment and more intensive treatment until they get through a crisis. Day treatment programmes also may be an option. How to help yourself after diagnosis? 1. Stick to your treatment plan and keep therapy appointments and take prescription medication as directed. 2. Recognise the situations or feelings that might trigger your desire to self-injure. Make sure you have worked out a plan with your therapist to help you soothe or distract yourself or to get support so you're ready the next time you feel the urge to self-injure. 3. Ask for help. Keep a list of supporters and their numbers handy so you can ask them to help you if you feel like self-harming, and keep your doctor or therapist's phone number handy and tell him or her about all incidents relating to self-injury. 4. Take care of yourself. Learn how to include physical activity, eat healthily, and relaxation exercises as part of your daily routine. Ask your GP and therapist for help if you have sleep problems, which can significantly affect your behaviour. 5. Avoid alcohol, recreational drugs. They affect your ability to make good decisions and can put you at risk of self-harm. 6. Take appropriate care of your wounds if you injure yourself, or seek medical treatment if needed. Don't share instruments used for self-injury. That raises the risk of infectious disease. Coping skills and support for family and friends. 1. Get information. Learn more about self-harm can help you understand why it occurs and help you develop a compassionate but firm approach to helping your loved one stop this harmful behaviour. 2. Know the strategies and relapse prevention plan your loved one has developed with the therapist so you can encourage it. 3. Try not to judge or criticise. Criticism, yelling, threats or accusations may increase the risk of self-harm behaviour. Offer support, praise efforts to express emotions in healthy ways, and try to spend positive time together. 4. Let your loved one know you care no matter what. Remind the person that they are not alone and that you're available to talk. 5. Recognise that you may not change the behaviour, but you can help the person find resources, identify coping strategies and offer support during treatment. 6. Support the treatment plan. Encourage your loved one to take prescribed medication and stress the importance of keeping therapy appointments. 7. Remove or limit access to matches, knives, razor blades or other items that may be used for self-harm. 8. Share coping strategy ideas. Your loved one may benefit from hearing strategies you use when feeling distressed. You can also serve as a role model by using appropriate coping strategies, set healthy boundaries, and stress reduction techniques. 9. Find support and get therapy yourself. Consider talking to people who've gone through what you're going through. Share your own experiences with trusted family members or friends. Ask your GP or therapist if there are local support groups for parents, family members, or friends of people who self-harm. 10. Take care of yourself too. Take some time to do the things you enjoy doing and get adequate rest and physical activity. 11. Suicide risk. If at any time you feel there may be a risk of suicide, then don't hesitate to call the emergency services immediately. There are links to many helpful blogs, podcasts, and videos in the original post, and I'll leave a link in the description below. Thank you for listening to my podcast today. This podcast is also available in a blog format, which you can access at www.deborahburnpsychologyservices.com. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to this podcast, follow me on social media at DB Psychology, or subscribe to our mailing list, which is full of freebies and keeps you up to date on the latest blogs and podcasts. Be sure to tune in next week